They walked for a while. After a few minutes, Caden found himself in stride with Tayris, slightly apart from the other two. Tayris glanced across at him.
"Now you have your memories back. I have to know,"
he said softly, looking vaguely uncomfortable.
"Are you the one who brought Davian to me when he was a child?"
Caden stared blankly at Tayris, so surprised that he missed a root in his path and almost tripped.
"What? No."
He shook his head firmly at Tayris's questioning look.
"No. I would remember something like that. I knew that he would be at Kaladel and did everything I could to make sure that the Venerate didn't look around there. But I've never known where he came from before that."
Tayris nodded heavily.
"Worth asking," he said ruefully. "I never even saw who left him. He just appeared. I always assumed that he must have been given to my care because of Jacaris's memories. Because of anyone alive, I knew Alchesh's visions the best. Knew that Davian had been seen by him and by other augurs throughout the years and was destined to be someone special. Someone who needed protecting. It was the only logical explanation because children have never been..."
He rubbed his face, and the weight of his decisions was evident in the motion. Caden said nothing for a few seconds. Alchesh had written so much about Davian because that was why he'd become an augur in the first place. Caden had pressed and pressed, held off and held off on using that sever, all in order to try and find out more about him. He'd known that Alchesh was losing control, and still he'd pushed.
"I don't know why he was left with you," he said eventually, "but I'm quite sure that he was meant to be left with you. Maybe because of your knowledge, or maybe just because someone knew that you were the right person. You're at least part of the reason Davian grew up to be the man he is."
He clapped Tayris on the shoulder.
"I know you made mistakes, but I don't think that you were the mistake."
Tayris thought for a moment, then gave Caden a small smile.
"Thank you."
The smile widened slightly.
"And if you do ever happen to remember dropping off a small child..."
Caden chuckled as they climbed the final part of the trail and emerged onto the clifftop.
"You'll be the first to know."
They joined Weir and Asha at the edge, and Caden's smile vanished as he gazed down on the scene in horror. Weir's assessments had been almost perfectly correct, but part of Caden had still hoped that the young man's inexperience might have been exaggerating the desperation of the situation. There was no doubting him now, though. The three bridges burned bright even in the clear morning sun, soldiers still crossing, though it was just a trickle of men, some even going back the other way as they ran messages or returned to haul more supplies. If the bridges were cut now, it would be an inconvenience for the Gilshar, but not much more. The camp spread out below centered on the massive Darisian ruin, which swarmed with soldiers and what appeared to be the remaining Dargathan. There were hundreds of tents pitched and thousands of soldiers moving purposefully around the camp, which itself looked ordered, comfortably established. In the middle of it all, right near the castle, were the columns. Caden felt a wave of nausea as he gazed at them. Was it his imagination, or could he sense the death and darkness emanating from them even from this distance? The Desrealites would be sacrificing men every time they were moved, the soldiers who carried them drained of their essence by mere contact, and that was while they were inactive. He shuddered, flashes of Darisi filling his mind. How could the others have done this? After all they had been through, all they had seen, how could they have countenanced building this weapon again? Even Gassandrid, for all the man's flaws and zealotry, surely hadn't advised it, hadn't planned this. He swallowed against the nausea.
If I hadn't used knowing on Alaris, they would have just walked in here, destroyed the Serarium before anyone even knew what was happening.
Beside him, Asha shifted, glancing over at Weir and Tayris.
"They have traps?"
Tyrus nodded emphatically.
A lot of them. And you won't be able to use essence around the columns either, said Caden heavily. They do much the same thing.
His heart sank as he stared down silently, not really listening as Tyrus, Asha, and Weir began discussing how they could possibly get to the columns. He didn't need to. There was no way to do it by force. Not realistically. That left one option, though he didn't like it at all.
I need to go down there and talk to them, he said abruptly.
The other three stopped dead, staring at him as if they thought they hadn't heard correctly.
What?
Asked Asha, confused.
Why would that help?
Because they're doing all of this at the behest of their gods, said Caden. And I'm one of them.
He gestured, making the wolf's head symbol glow briefly in the air in front of him.
I know what to say. I can convince them that I am Talkanor.
Tyrus acceded thoughtfully, though neither Asha's nor Weir's expression changed.
You really think that will work?
Asked Weir, doubt thick in his voice. If the Venerate went to all the trouble of making those columns, hiding them from you all this time.
I know. They've probably anticipated my interfering, agreed Caden bleakly. But Alaris was supposed to be here, fighting with them, guiding them. I could never have convinced them if that had been the case. But now?
He pulled in a breath.
No Alaris. The Elatai turning on them? Resistance when they thought that there would be nothing here but a glorious march to victory? I can use that.
He hesitated.
And I have to try, he finished softly. Even if we could get Lycanius and seal the rift before Shemaloth makes it to Dilanus, we're talking about thousands of lives.
If he can convince the Gilshar of who he is, they will listen to him.
Tyrus agreed quietly to Weir. Weir nodded slowly, hope sparking in his eyes.
So what are you going to tell them?
Whatever I think will work.
Caden shrugged.
There are tests in place to measure whether I am who I am. That will go a long way toward convincing them. After that, I'll just have to see.
There was silence for a few seconds.
If they hid all of this from you, why did the other Venerate include you in the Pantheon?
Asked Asha curiously.
I was still very much on their side back then. They would have seen keeping this from me as a kindness, not some hedge against my loyalty, Caden said simply. Easy enough for them to do, too. I wasn't involved with establishing Desriel. It was initially a resistance against the Dauresians, and Gassandred was the one who militarized that discontent.
He shrugged at their looks.
The Dauresians were the invaders here first, you know. When we came, it was generations later, but plenty of Andarans still felt as though they were living in an occupied land when we arrived, and their occupiers were defined by their ability to use essence. So Gassandred gave those Andarans anti-essence weapons, and suggested that they base themselves in the West, in what's now Desriel. Turned them from a rabble into a force. And with us invading from the North, the Dauresians simply didn't have time to deal with it.
So the Desrielites broke away and just accepted that you were gods?
Caden snorted.
No. It took generations for that to happen, and it wasn't really our doing. Gassandred made us known as heralds of one true god. He didn't mention El, as that was too closely associated with the Dauresians, and established the rules against using essence. In retrospect, I think that might have been influenced by Shemaloth's instructions, too, he added grimly. But after the boundary went up, the Gilshar declared independence from the remaining Dauresians, splitting Andara. And out of all that, over the years, rituals and new laws were made surrounding what Gassandred had said. His words got twisted or misinterpreted, and other outside stories about the Venerate made their way into the canon, too. People started adding to his rules, expanding upon them, usually to further their own positions of power. None of us, even me, really cared.
If anything, it meant that when the boundary came down, they could be more easily used as a distraction. He shrugged awkwardly.
But apparently the others had much more in mind for them. This must have been part of what they were doing this past year, once they knew it was safe to leave Talon Gol. Organizing the Gilshar, teaching them how to order the Banes, use the columns.
He shook his head ruefully.
But enough of that. I'll sneak in. It will be much more effective if I just appear in their midst. And there's no time to waste, I suppose, he concluded cheerlessly.
Now?
Weir ran his hands through his hair.
I'll build a gate first, once I find somewhere secure a little further down, said Caden. Regardless of whether this succeeds, I need to get to Ilshangath Del Teth as quickly as possible afterward. Davian will be getting out of Zavalar very soon.
He paused, a thread of guilt warming through his gut. Even 30 years on, he was still deeply ashamed of what he'd done there at the end.
But after that, yes, immediately.
And I'll go alone, he added, anticipating the next question.
Gods don't need support, and there's no need to risk anyone else anyway. Instead, position your gifted at a safe distance around the outside of the camp. Everyone you can.
He held Weir's gaze.
I'll be back by nightfall if I'm successful. If you don't hear from me by then, wait until you see me signal and then fire some essence at them.
He squinted back at the camp, thinking.
With a spyglass, you should be able to pick me out from up here. Attack in the right places, and the distraction might just allow me to get out again.
I'll go, too. You can manage to sneak in one more person?
Asha scowled at him as he made to protest.
If the Gilshar capture you, then that's it. We lose. I'll hide somewhere while you try to convince them, and if it doesn't work, I can be there to help you escape.
She looked at him resolutely.
From what Weir says, they have a lot of new weapons down there. It's not smart to do this alone.
Caden wavered, seeing the determination in Asha's eyes.
If there's a fight, you won't even be able to rely on that armor of yours. You'll only have whatever extra strength and reflexes essence gives you.
The armor's anchored to my skin. It's basically internal, replied Asha firmly. Traps won't affect it. I'll be fine.
Caden sighed, but eventually nodded. He didn't like the idea of risking both himself and Asha. They were arguably the Andaran's most powerful weapons now, but Asha was right. One other person could easily sneak in with him, and having such a formidable ally inside could make all the difference. Weir chewed his lip, sighing but not protesting as he realized that Caden had conceded to Asha.
Nightfall?
Nightfall, confirmed Caden. If you've heard nothing by then, keep an eye out for some sort of signal. You'll know it if you see it.
We'll be watching,
Weir promised, Tayrus nodding his agreement. Caden gave him a tight smile of acknowledgement, then beckoned to Asha. They started down the hill. Chapter 42 Caden studied the Gilshar soldiers from the cover of the trees, then focused and stepped outside of time. He moved calmly but swiftly once his surroundings slowed to near motionless, pulling Asha with him, navigating past the guards and into the outer ring of the Gilshar camp. Khan was already a little unstable here from their proximity to the columns, and while he wasn't worried just yet, he had to acknowledge that he wasn't going to be able to do this for long periods, particularly as he got closer to the castle.
We need to find clothes, he said softly.
They sized up the area, beginning to check inside some of the more isolated tents. Soon enough, they had collected 2 uniforms, and Caden politely turned his back as they both swiftly changed into Desrealite attire. As soon as they were done, Caden glanced around to make sure no one would see, and let his time bubble drop. No one stopped them, or even looked twice as they walked down the makeshift street between the tents, heading directly for the castle. The sounds of the camp washed over Caden as he made his way along. Soldiers laughed, cursed, gambled. Officers barked orders in irritable tones. Men and women moaned to each other about the drudgery of their tasks as they pitched tents or dug lavatories, or tried to show bravado by talking of what they would do when they finally got to face the Andorans properly. On the whole, then, it was the same as most military encampments Caden had seen. Just a collection of people, misled, and some of them, as with any army, undoubtedly here for selfish reasons, but far from evil. He gave Asha's arm a warning squeeze and shifted them outside of time again at the next checkpoint, perhaps a few hundred feet from the castle, cognizant of how the time bubble shivered around him this time. He didn't dare let it drop here, though. This was clearly a more secure area of the camp, with everyone in sight bearing the markings of an officer. They stepped quickly toward the crumbling structure, Caden wincing at flickers of faster movement outside the time bubble. The columns, in their inactive state, made Khan much harder to grasp, but seemed to interfere with existing Khan structures slightly less. He just needed to maintain his manipulation of time until they were in position. The castle itself was in better condition than it had appeared from afar. Though the upper edges of the gray stone walls were crumbling, the courtyard and inner buildings remained solidly intact, and the soldiers on watch up above moved comfortably with no fear of the stone giving way beneath their feet. It was a massive fortress, capable of housing at least 1,000 soldiers, though that number was undoubtedly lessened by some of the damage from age. The Dorisians must have spent years building it, though to what purpose, out in this abandoned section of the world, Caden had no idea. Once through the gates, he located a tower with a good view out over the encampment, one of its sides crumbling. Though a path between two sections of the castle ran through it, the connecting hallway didn't appear to be well-traveled, as good a spot as any for Asha to wait. It only took a few minutes to find their way there. Once satisfied that it would be appropriate, Caden guided Asha into one of the corners of a small side room, a position where she would be able to see out the window as well as through the missing wall on the opposite side. "You can't go anywhere once this is done," he murmured as he started on her invisibility shield. "It's anchored to the wall. You take more than a step out, and they'll be able to see you."
"I know."
Asha looked pensive as she watched Caden finish his work, but she sounded calm enough. They had gone over the plan several times already, simple though it was. Caden finally stepped back, Asha vanishing from view as the invisibility shield took hold. He gave a brief nod of satisfaction.
"Ill with you," he murmured.
"You too,"
whispered Asha's voice in response. Caden reduced his time bubble to encompass only himself and then moved on. It took him almost 10 minutes, focused close to breaking point, to find the Gilshar. They had, unsurprisingly, taken the massive main hall to use for their discussions. He slipped past the guards at the door and noted several men present inside, their ages ranging from 20 through to at least 80. Each of them bore the golden knot that indicated their rank, though. Chief priests, Desriel's equivalent of the assembly. Relief flooded through him. Weir had told him that they were present, information uncovered from the soldier Aaron had read, and Caden had assumed that at least most of them would be gathered together, planning out their next move. But there had been no guarantees. He walked onto the dais, raised above where the men were talking, and carefully tapped essence to form his own symbol, the wolf's head, large on the two side walls and the one behind him. Then he slammed the double doors to the room and sealed them with more essence, locking out the guards. He burned away the disguise that he had been wearing, leaving him naked, nothing man-made touching his skin, that was important, and let the time bubble drop.
"Priests!"
He let essence shine out from him, a blinding wave of light. The men down below leaped as if physically attacked as Caden's voice boomed unnaturally loud around the hall. As he let it fade, he funneled more essence to the symbols on the wall, drawing the men's attention to them.
"Kneel!"
The men knelt with alacrity. 8 of them, Caden realized. 1 was missing. Unfortunate, It would have been best if all of them were present for this, but these should easily be enough.
"Command us, Hotel Kanor,"
called the man at the front. He was older, with graying hair and a face that spoke of restraint and severity. His nod indicated that he was High Priest of Aelar. Something was bothering Caden about the scene, but he couldn't place it.
"No."
He made his gaze hard.
"Have you forgotten the signs required by law before divinity is accepted?"
The youngest man's voice shook as he spoke up.
"The secret signs which you have already shown us, Hotel Kanor, and the divine marks written upon your flesh."
He faltered, clearly unwilling to push the point.
"Good. Then fetch your weapon," growled Caden, his voice rolling around the room. "Let me prove to you who I am, and then you will listen."
The words hadn't yet faded to silence before one of the priests was scurrying to a large chest at the side of the room. Caden had been expecting as much. The sacred artifacts used in rituals were rarely far from the high priests, and weapons were unfortunately all too often needed in Gilshar rituals. The man's trembling hands finally emerged, clutching a spear, long and sleek. Caden gave it a dismissive glance and then refused to look at it further, though he was not looking forward to the next part.
"You know what to do," he said.
Of course, Hotel Kanor," said the man, his head bowed. "For the glory of the last god."
Caden stretched his hands out to the sides, slightly above his shoulders, keeping his face calm. This was going to hurt. The spear would pierce his heart, and he would leave it there, letting the blood flow from the wound, guiding it around his body to form the symbols of each of the venerate. A disgusting ritual, but a convincing one.
"Strike," he said calmly, the word thundering off each corner of the hall.
The spear went through his heart, and Caden immediately knew that something was wrong. His jaw clenched, and he looked down at the tip sprouting from his chest, dark blood already spilling down his skin toward his bare stomach. The tip of the spear was black, not metal. That was wrong. He started funneling the blood into his own wolf symbol, but halfway through had to pause, pain getting in the way. He tapped his essence reserve, quickly flooding some of it to the wound in order to ease the pressure. The essence dissipated. Caden felt a chill of panic, his mind suddenly hazy. He looked up at the priests for the first time, finally spotting what he should have seen earlier. Fear, but something else, too. Excitement. With a groan, Caden stumbled, going to his knees, trying to grip the spear and pull it out, but unable to do so.
"Aelar warned us that you would come. A man with the temerity to call himself divine. A false god," said the older man. "Had you not wondered where your own chief priest was?" He walked up to Caden, evidently growing in confidence, and crouched down in front of him. "Didn't you hear his cries, or those of half your followers? They have carried the great weapon as penance, you know. Some willingly, others not. But they have suffered and died. And where have you been, O God of Balance?"
Caden wheezed in reply, unable to do anything more than watch as the massive symbols on the wall faded into nothing. The spear was a vessel. It was blocking his ability to stave off the effects of the wound. He wasn't going to die from this, but he couldn't do much else until the thing was pulled out of his body. Alaris had anticipated this, or Gassandrid, or Diara. One of them had equipped the Gilshar with this spear for this very purpose. All such weapons were supposed to have been destroyed, but apparently the other venerate had done many things of which he was unaware.
"You are making a mistake," he gasped, knowing the facade of his godhood was done with now. "Aelar is the one who has betrayed you."
Should he have done this differently? Would it have made a difference if he had been honest and simply shown them the memory of Darisi's fall from the start, the millions dying in the life-draining shadow of the columns? He'd been intending to do it eventually, but he'd thought it needed to come from Talkanor, not from him. It probably wouldn't have changed anything. Still, he reached out, trying desperately to feed them the images, to change their minds. It was far too late. Everything faded. Caden tried to moan, but no sound came out. He sluggishly fuzzed back to awareness, the breeze sweeping down from the mountains icy against his cheek, distracting against the surreal absence of any other feeling. It took a brief, disoriented moment to remember what had happened. His heart started to drum as his eyes rolled down and he saw the spear jutting a good foot out in front of him. It had been moved. It was through his neck now. His spine was severed, he realized dimly. He could tell that someone had clothed him again, but he couldn't feel the fabric or anything else below the wound. The spear had to be one of Andriel's weapons, given his body's inability to adjust. He hadn't recognized it. It wasn't one of the five blades, at least. But this must have been an earlier attempt. Something else created during Andriel's hundreds of years of experimenting with ways to end the Venerate. He closed his eyes, cursing himself for his overconfidence. Alaris, as usual, had thought ahead. That he had poisoned the Gilshar against Caden was no surprise. Caden had been prepared for that, had thought of plenty of ways that he might work to overcome whatever lies had been told. But he hadn't foreseen the weapon. Alaris must have guessed that he would try to use his godhood to talk down the Desrealites and planned accordingly. He shifted his head slightly, relieved to find he could do so, even if the pain was exquisite. The injury must be toward the base of his throat. He closed his eyes again, reaching out for Khan. There was nothing there. He frowned, searching apprehensively for the dark energy. He could understand the spear blocking him, but this... His heart sank as he realized what was wrong.
"That looks uncomfortable."
Caden opened his eyes again at the voice, rolling his eyes to the left and then managing a wan smile as he saw who had spoken. He opened his mouth to reply, but all that came out was a gargle. Aaron smiled back through a mask of dried blood, which coated the left side of his face. The head wound he'd sustained was clearly a little higher, with much of his hair matted, caked with sticky brown. He wasn't bound.
"Sorry, I can't pull it out. They don't like it much when I try," he said apologetically, gesturing to the blood on his face.
He glanced upward, then quickly turned away at an angle, no longer looking at Caden.
"Try not to move. They'll probably make me go elsewhere if they realize you're awake."
Caden grunted in response, doing his best to look around without moving his head. From what he could see, along with Aaron, there were about a half dozen men and women in the courtyard. The others were all huddled together over at the far side, talking softly and occasionally glancing anxiously toward Caden and Aaron, though none of them appeared to realize that he was conscious. The space in which they were imprisoned was at least 100 feet long and perhaps a third as wide. Grass grew tangled and wild through the cobblestones, but otherwise it was in good repair, with sturdy-looking gates barring the two entrances. Walls rose sharply on each side, 15 feet to the top at least. As Caden's gaze traveled upward, he spotted heavily armored, attentive-looking guards glaring down, crossbows readied. Aaron followed his gaze.
"Not the best accommodations," he agreed quietly. "The columns are on just the other side of that wall. Unless I got completely turned around when they brought me in, I assume that they're the fate's cursed reason we can't use Khan or essence."
Caden grunted again in acknowledgement, still assessing the area. A lone figure lay prone on the ground nearby, and the longer Caden stared at it, the more certain he was that it wasn't breathing. The body was face down, but Caden could see black veins in the neck beneath the dark hair, knew the man well enough to realize who it was. He felt a slight, hollow twinge at the recognition. He hadn't liked the man, but he'd been an ally. And it was strange, too. If the Venerate had taken the precautions they obviously had, then they surely would have warned the Desraelites to keep any augurs alive. He flicked his eyes questioningly at Aaron. There was silence, warring emotions flitting across the young man's face as he realized what Caden was asking. He shifted awkwardly.
"They knew he was an augur," he said softly. "I was too close to the columns when they got me, and I asked the others to keep quiet, so they still think I'm gifted."
He touched the red mark on his left arm lightly.
"But Siner wanted them to know about him. He was going to let them take him back to Desrael, risk everything on the chance that he could escape and use that medallion."
He saw Caden shift slightly and nodded.
"Yes, he told me what it was for. It was a confession of sorts, I think. He wanted to explain why he was doing it."
He shook his head.
"That was right before he tried to kill me."
Caden closed his eyes, feeling Aaron's pain. Siner had been intending to use Alchash's medallion to sever his link with the forge, to stop being an augur rather than sacrificing himself. So when confronted with execution, he'd done the only thing he could to see himself saved, while making sure that the other remaining augur was dead.
"I am assuming that the others will be coming for you. They can't exactly get Lycanius back without you,"
said Aaron after a few long seconds. He sounded weary, sad. Caden opened his eyes again and tried to speak, to tell Aaron that Asha was coming at nightfall, but the spear through his throat left him with only a harsh rasping. Aaron shifted uneasily, eyeing the guards up above.
"Don't try to speak. The fact is, it doesn't matter for me. I know this place. I know what happens here."
A concerned shout came from above. Caden rolled his eyes to see one of the guards pointing at him, gesturing urgently. Caden gritted his teeth. He needed to tell Aaron to hold on until the evening, that Asher was here somewhere, that someone would be coming for him soon. He gargled desperately at Aaron, but all it did was elicit more shouting from above. Aaron looked around, paling, then abruptly strode over and embraced Caden as more guards appeared in the courtyard, rushing toward them. Caden felt something heavy drop around his neck.
"Use it on a shell,"
Aaron whispered, mouth right next to Caden's ear.
"Save one of us, at least."
Caden shouted, but it all just came out in a rasping hiss, tears of frustration rolling down his cheeks as Aaron stepped back just before the guards arrived. The augur gave Caden a slight nod and cheerfully brave grin before he was dragged roughly away. The other gifted were being ushered out of the courtyard, too, and even Siner's body was being carted away. But it was the look of brazen confidence on the young man's face that broke Caden's heart. Aaron had left him with a request that he could never fulfill. He'd been the last of the augurs who might have been saved, and now, from what he had said, the way he had said it, he was going to his death. Caden rolled his eyes skyward, the ache in his chest only deepening as he noted the light remaining. He couldn't see the sun, but it wasn't close to dusk. Aaron passed from view through the far doorway, walking with head held high despite the shoves of the guards. Caden squeezed his eyes shut, breathing, doing his best to press down the pain. What was done was done. All he could do now was wait. Chapter 43. Asha held her breath as another group of soldiers marched past the open room, though none of them even looked in her direction. Like most of the men inside the castle walls, they appeared relaxed but purposeful, talking among themselves quietly as they walked from one section of the castle to another. They were organized and never lingered, but there was purpose rather than urgency to their movements as they passed through this ruined section. They all assumed, rightly to be fair, that they were safe here. Asha allowed herself to breathe again once they were past, forced to trust Caden's makeshift vessel yet again. She understood the theory behind it well enough, conned to mask and protect the essence, as well as to create the illusion of invisibility. But the problem was that she had no way of knowing whether it was actually working, beyond the fact that no one thus far had raised the alarm. She glanced restlessly out the nearby window. The sun had been creeping inexorably downward for some time now and was close to touching the distant snow-capped mountains on Desriel's side of the Devlis. That was troubling. Even allowing time for the high priests to be gathered, Caden should have been finished with his trial by now, should have either convinced them to listen to him or escaped. Both options would have involved his coming back to find her. She stared out the window for a few more minutes, heart sinking faster than the sun. She'd suspected an hour earlier that there was a problem, but this was fairly close to certain. She itched to move. Though it would be far more dangerous, she had seen plenty of individuals moving freely about the castle during the past few hours. There was nothing about her that looked more Andaran than Desrealite, particularly with the uniform. If she acted confident and looked like she knew where she was going when she came across other people, she didn't think that there would be a problem. Still, that wasn't the plan. Not for another hour. She knew better than to act too early. If Caden was delayed for some legitimate reason, her being found sneaking around could ruin everything. Time passed at a painfully slow crawl, Asha swinging between racking nervousness whenever someone passed by, to anxiety mixed with grinding boredom otherwise. She watched the shadows lengthen outside, though she couldn't see much beyond the ruined towers unless she moved closer to the window, which she had no intention of risking. Finally, though, the last rays of the sun vanished as it dipped behind the mountains, and Asha began cautiously stretching out her stiff muscles. Something had gone wrong, and now she had to find out exactly what. She took a breath and stepped out from behind the invisibility shield. Apprehension gnawed at her as she walked out of the small side room in the tower, heading away from the stairs via which she and Caden had arrived. The columns were being kept on the western side of the castle, guarded by hundreds of soldiers, some of whom were atop the castle's thick outer wall. Caden had said that any prison they put him in would likely be close by. The columns were by far the most effective trap for both Essence and Khan. Asha doubted that they would keep him out in the open, though. That meant a cell somewhere along the western wall or near it. That was the part of the castle in the best repair. If there was anywhere secure nearby, it would be in that section. It was, unfortunately, also the area that held the most soldiers. Asha's heart skipped a beat and her mind went blank as three appeared at the end of the corridor walking toward her. She forced herself to keep calm, to keep moving just as she had been. She gazed steadily at the men as they approached, affecting interested nonchalance, even as her heart pounded, doing her best to act exactly as Brashada would have. She didn't know enough about the Desrealite army to pretend that she was part of it, but she could be a hunter. As she had all day, she ran through how a hunter, a seeker, would behave. Their status, the gods they would be likely to reference, everything she knew from weeks of training and talking with Brashada. The men passed by her without a glance. She almost stumbled with surprise but kept going and refused to look back or increase her pace despite her instincts. Everyone here had something to do, somewhere to be. This castle was nothing more than a stopover, a convenient bastion against the initial Andaran attacks. No one had time to take note of every unfamiliar face, particularly when the army here numbered in the thousands, and this was its protected center. She made her way through a maze of hallways, making certain to keep moving westward. She passed four more groups of soldiers over the next few minutes, none of whom batted an eyelid at her presence. It seemed that as long as she looked like she was going somewhere with a purpose, she wouldn't be stopped. Soon enough, she felt the change of pressure in the air, everything suddenly heavy and uncomfortable, cloying. She glanced around to check that she was alone, then cautiously tried to light a spark of essence at the tip of her finger. Nothing happened. She grimaced. She was getting closer. She was also in much more danger now. Asha soon found herself making her way along a narrow gallery overlooking a large courtyard below, this one well lit, ringed by torches. It was clearly in use, the surrounding gray stone walls looking more solid than elsewhere, supplies and weapons stashed off to the side. Asha balked as a line of figures caught the edge of her vision, her racing pulse only easing a little when she realized that they were swaying slightly in the breeze, hanging from a gallows below. She swallowed, moving to hurry past the grisly spectacle. Caden wouldn't be among the dead, even within range of the columns. A gust of wind made the torches flicker and flare, and Asha paused. Some of those people were wearing tattered red cloaks. She slowed to a halt, squinting at the bodies, which were mostly hidden in the gloom. Her stomach twisted as she recognized Tiala, a gifted from Tol Athian who had often visited the library back when Asha had been a shadow. Her distinctive white hair concealed half of her face, but Asha knew straight away that it was she. She scanned down the gallows and froze, heart stopping as her gaze settled on the last in line. The face was deep in shadow as it twisted gently in the breeze, but she knew the clothes, the form. She spotted the way down, moving automatically. She had to check, had to be certain. Asha scrambled down the stairs and hurried across the silent courtyard, gaze transfixed, disbelief turning gradually to understanding, and then trembling, gasping grief as Aaron's bloated face resolved from the darkness. Torchlight reflected off his lifeless eyes, his head at an unnatural angle where his neck had been broken by the abrupt fall and short stop. Asha reached up a shaking hand and gently touched his foot for a desperate, vain moment, wondering if she might be able to revive him. His body twisted slightly in response. She closed her eyes and let her arm fall back to her side, doing everything she could to hold back her tears. Not here. Not yet. She had to remember where she was. But Aaron. Aaron had been her friend. Not to mention an augur, one of the most dangerous people in the entire world. And now he was just gone. Fear seeped in, under her skin, into her bones. She felt a nauseating wave of dizziness.
You! What are you doing there?
Asha started, her lightheadedness threatening to overcome her. Then she exhaled, forcing everything out. The aching sorrow, the fear. She couldn't afford to break now. She turned, staring calmly at the half-dozen soldiers marching toward her. The man at the front was older, and from the crispness of his uniform and his attitude, he was someone important.
"Just admiring the Gavesh," said Asha cheerfully, inwardly thankful that her voice didn't crack. "Meldia knows I wasn't told that there was going to be any entertainment today."
She eyed the man in what she hoped was a vaguely disdainful fashion.
"Who do I speak to about keeping informed?"
The man gave her a perplexed look.
"This area is off limits. Even had you known, you would not have been allowed to watch."
He squinted at her.
"You are young."
Asha arched an eyebrow. Rashada had been a seeker at 16. Asha was old enough to pass.
"You do realize who I am?"
She sighed as the man shook his head, making a small sign with her hand. A dismissive gesture, something Brashada, Nethgala, had done often to indicate irritation.
"I swear by Elar that my Terragesh was right. We Seekers are getting less respect than we deserve."
She glared at him challengingly, resting a hand lightly on the blade strapped to her side. It was a risk being so aggressive, but Brashada had acted this way, and from both her stories and Weir and Davian's, it was clear that this was simply how most Seekers were. They were considered the elite of the Gilshar, divinely chosen, blessed with talent beyond even the highest-ranking soldier. Though they were not officially of a higher rank than anyone in the army, they were not ranked at all, in fact. She was certain that they were generally considered above everyone else. The man eyed her, and everyone was silent. Then he chuckled, echoed uneasily by the group behind him.
"Of course, of course. I am Sarish. My apologies. Adesha. Adesha,"
repeated the soldier as he gave a slight bow, though Asha could tell it galled him to do so.
"In the rush of war, sometimes hospitality is forgotten."
Asha sniffed, motioning with her head that she accepted the apology. Sarish straightened, and the group looked to move on. Asha didn't think, didn't hesitate.
"Is this all there is? I would be disappointed if there were not more," she said loudly.
She saw the almost imperceptible glower on the soldier's face. She was pushing her luck, but she needed information.
"These were the only prisoners for today," said Sarish.
"What about the other one?"
It was a younger man stepping forward, his eager look shriveling beneath his leader's glared response.
"I just thought the Seeker might be interested," he finished, flashing Asha a warm smile.
Asha nodded back to him, then looked at Sarish.
"Well?"
Sarish gave his underling another glare, but gestured.
"I fear that we must continue upon our task, but Garrus would be honored to show you the way. It will be something you have never seen, Seeker Adesha. Something you will likely never see again," he promised her, a brief spark of excitement in his eyes.
Asha's stomach churned at the words.
"Now that sounds like it is worth my time."
She put as much upbeat enthusiasm into her voice as she could manage.
"Lead the way."
Garrus didn't need a second invitation, guiding her swiftly away from the gallows, which Asha left in their wake only too willingly. A minute later, the young soldier chattering brightly the entire way about the prisoner who refused to die, they turned a corner onto the beginning of a raised walkway and Garrus fell silent, gesturing downward and coming to a halt. Asha tried to look fascinated rather than horrified as she peered down into the narrow courtyard.
"And you say he is still alive?" she asked,
the disbelief in her voice not entirely feigned. Caden was pinned to the wall by a spear through his throat, motionless, eyes shut. Even knowing what he was, he looked like a corpse.
"That's what they say. I haven't seen him move, but others have."
Garrus was standing too close to Asha for her liking, but she stayed in character, ignoring him completely rather than moving away. Asha snorted.
"No man can survive that."
"The rumors say that he is not a man."
Garrus spoke in the breathless whisper of someone telling a secret he was certain the other person would find enthralling. He went before the high priests themselves to prove he was a god.
"And failed,"
he finished triumphantly, eyes alight with excitement. Asha cocked her head to the side, pretending to be reluctantly impressed, even as her mind raced. So Caden had convinced the high priests to administer the trial, but then failed? How?
"I wish to take a closer look."
Garrus turned to her wide-eyed.
"We cannot," he said in a panicked whisper. "This far is allowed, but the guards are under strict orders. If we were to distract them from their duty..."
Asha glanced contemptuously at the young man.
"You promised me something interesting, not a dead body seen from a distance and half-baked rumors about why it is there."
Garrus's face fell, and Asha thought he was going to give up.
"All right," he said finally, his voice low. "But we have to be quick. If we cause trouble, I will deal with it."
They were in the corner of the courtyard on the raised, covered walkway. Asha could see the guards standing in archways on the opposite side, but her view of the ones on this side was blocked by stone. She needed to know how many men were keeping watch. She walked at a casual stroll, hands behind her back, Garrus trailing a little behind as she stared down at Caden as if in curiosity. One of the guards gave them a questioning, half-irritated glance, but Asha acknowledged him briefly and then proceeded to ignore him. The man shook his head and went back to watching the courtyard. Within a minute, they had reached the far end of the walkway, Caden close enough now that she could see the slight rise and fall of his chest. She steeled herself. Six guards, all with crossbows, plus Garrus, and Caden incapacitated. She'd known that it would be difficult, but this... She'd seen the determination in the guards' eyes, seen the way their gazes roved the courtyard below warily despite the apparent lack of danger. These men wouldn't leave Caden unattended, no matter what story she came up with, no matter what distraction she tried to cause. She and Garrus left the walkway, walking out the far door and into a new, completely empty corridor.
So,
said Garrus, turning to her with a smile that looked eager now that they hadn't been reprimanded.
What do you think?
Asha injected her arm with essence and hit him squarely on the jaw. The blow was powerful enough to send him flying back against the stone wall. He hit hard and slumped to the floor, unconscious. She slung Garrus's arm over one shoulder and flooded her body with essence, giving her a rush of strength, increasing her perception. Then she hauled the young man back through the doorway, onto the walkway. The two guards closest spun as they saw Garrus, crossbows leveled at her.
Mildir, take it. Get over here,
she gasped, wide-eyed, stumbling and putting Garrus gently against the wall. She feigned a wince as she did so.
What happened?
Weapons wavered and then lowered as the men hurried over, out of sight of the others on guard.
I punched him in the face, said Asha,
as she let essence weave just beneath and over her skin. There was a moment, just a moment, where the essence strained against the decay in the air, and she feared that even with the energy sitting as it should just within her body, the column's effect would be too powerful. Then her golden armor was blazing to life around her. She moved too quickly for the shocked soldiers to cry out, grabbing both of them and slamming them together with essence-enhanced strength. Both men fell limply to the ground. Four left, and no alarm so far. But the other guards would already have noticed the two missing from the edge of the walkway, even if they couldn't see where they were. And this area, while clearly closed off, wouldn't be free of traffic forever. She sprinted down the walkway toward the third guard on her side. There was a half-confused call from the other side of the courtyard, her blinding light easily spotted through the archways, but it was far too late for the hapless man with the crossbow. He was unconscious before he could even turn. The three guards on the other side were aware of the threat now, though. She flinched as a crossbow bolt sheared along her arm, grazing along the topmost layers of skin. She ignored the stinging pain, backing up as far from the courtyard as she possibly could, then bracing herself and sprinting forward. She jumped. Essence-enhanced legs gave her more than enough lift to cover the 30 feet of open air between the two walkways. The guard she had aimed for froze in shock at the sight of the blazing figure hurtling toward him. Asha crashed into the man, the force of the impact with her armor cracking his bones and sending him crashing backward. Asha rolled, she was well practiced in moving at speed from her time in the Dokken, and landed a solid kick to the soldier's head as she came to her feet beside him. He stayed down, unmoving. She flinched as two more bolts slammed into her armor in quick succession, sending her staggering back, the impact far more noticeable than it would normally have been. They would leave welts, but nothing was seriously injured. The decaying effect of the columns was clearly reducing her armor's efficacy. She growled and charged the final two guards. Both men tossed their crossbows aside as they recognized the futility of trying to reload and drew blades instead. Then the one farthest from her and closest to the door ran for the exit, yelling. Asha's own sword hissed from its sheath, her training both with Nathgulla's version of Bershada and over the past year in the Dokken giving her plenty of confidence. She knew that she wasn't a master swordsman and probably never would be, but with her essence-enhanced speed, two soldiers were no match for her. She attacked hard, slipping smoothly past the first Desrealite's strike and letting her blade slide along the man's stomach, the sharp steel slicing open a vicious wound. She ignored his cry of pain and burst after the second man. He half-turned at the last moment as if realizing that he couldn't make the door, but it was too late. Asha's blow sent him reeling over the edge of the walkway and into the courtyard below, a dull crunch indicating a heavy landing. Asha hurried back to the last man, who was moaning in fear and desperation, blood pooling on the stones near his stomach. Not a wound from which he would recover. She vacillated, then shook her head to herself, knelt.
"Shut up and hold still,"
she growled, grabbing his head and cracking it hard against the ground. The guard's eyes rolled into the back of his head. Then she pressed her hands against the hot, gushing wound, firmly, despite the unpleasant sensation, and poured essence into the man. She could sense that even with the direct contact, a great deal of the energy was decaying. Fortunately, with her enormous reserve, it simply didn't matter. Within a few seconds, the soldier was breathing more easily, the wound no longer bleeding. Asha scrambled to her feet again and leaped down into the courtyard, landing in front of Caden, a small puff of dust spurting up where her feet touched the dirt. She studied him worriedly, as she crouched and wiped the blood from her hands on an abandoned cloak lying nearby. His eyes rolled toward her, and he gasped, clearly trying to say something. Asha jumped. It wasn't far removed from seeing a corpse stir, and then shook her head at him.
"I'm assuming that if I remove this thing, you'll be able to heal. And if you can't, well, we'll worry about that if it happens."
"What in the Arya's name?"
The alarmed utterance came from above, audible only thanks to the hush of the courtyard. Asha spun to see another soldier, only just arrived apparently, and fortunately alone, watching her in horror. They both froze, and then the man was reaching for one of the dead guard's crossbows. Asha didn't hesitate. She flooded her right arm with essence, grasped the spear firmly, and pulled with all her strength. The weapon came away from the wall with a shiver, Caden sliding unpleasantly off it, neck trickling gore. Asha ignored him, spinning and hurling the spear as the crossbow was leveled at her. The weapon took the man through the chest, throwing him backward, the bolt from his shot pushed wide and missing her head by inches. She poured essence into her legs and leaped up to the walkway, but the man was already dead. Asha ignored the sick feeling in her stomach and didn't pause, jumping back down to Caden, who, much to her relief, was staggering to his feet. She landed in front of him, examining him critically. The hole in his throat had already closed up.
"Can you follow me?"
Caden swayed and then steadied.
"Think so,"
he rasped. He waved his hand urgently as Asha turned.
"Aaron,"
he gasped, worry in his eyes.
"Dead,"
Asha said the word as dispassionately as possible, not allowing herself to think about it. Caden's face crumpled, but he said nothing more, gesturing sadly for her to lead. Asha hesitated, then wrapped one arm around Caden, looking up at the walkway and fortifying her body with essence once again.
"Try to hold on."
She jumped. The wall was only 15 feet high, but Caden's weight dragged her down, and she barely managed to grasp the ledge with her free hand, hanging precariously before summoning every bit of strength she could and tossing Caden up onto the pathway. The red-headed man was already showing signs of recovery, able to scramble the rest of the way himself, rolling to safety. Asha dropped back down to the courtyard, taking a quick moment to recover her breath before leaping again. This time she made the jump comfortably, barely having to grab the ledge at all before hauling herself up to join Caden on the walkway. She paused, then hurried over to Garrus's unconscious form, stripping the uniform from him, the only one without blood on it, she suspected, and tossing items of clothing to Caden, who dressed quickly. Fortunately, the two men were alike enough in size. The next few minutes passed remarkably well. Evening meant that many of those inside the castle were sleeping, and the few people who were around they spotted early and avoided easily enough. Asha breathed a sigh of relief as she felt the oppressive presence of the columns finally disappear, and beside her she could see Caden's shoulders relax just a little as he sensed the same.
"I still can't use Khan," he said, a flash of pain flickering across his face. "That spear was a type of vessel that..."
He trailed off, as if realizing the pointlessness of going into detail.
"I won't be able to use Khan for a while. An hour or two, probably."
As he finished speaking, somewhere distantly behind them, the shouting began. Asha and Caden picked up the pace. They jogged for a minute, and Asha was just beginning to think that they might be able to make it out of the castle unseen when there was movement up ahead. A half-dozen soldiers appeared at a run directly in their path. Asha tapped essence, but Caden was already leaping forward, blade flashing. He was suddenly a blur, moving smoothly between the opposing soldiers, dancing away from their thrusts and delivering his own with deadly precision. Asha watched in astonishment. If he wasn't using Khan to slow time, then he had to at least be using essence to enhance his reflexes. Within 10 seconds, there were 6 bodies on the floor, none of them moving. Caden breathed deeply, sheathing his blade as Asha hurried over.
"Much better,"
he muttered as he rolled his right shoulder experimentally, voice no longer hoarse.
"Let's keep moving."
Asha swallowed, but nodded. The shouts around them began to spread, angry and panicked in equal measure as torches, a distinctive white, not the usual orange, started flaring to life along the castle walls. Asha and Caden finally reached a gap in the rubble that opened to the outside of the castle, 30 feet above the ground. Caden brought Asha to a halt, hesitating. This is probably our best way out, he said, indicating the darkened ground below. It might be time to signal Weir. Asha agreed, heart in her throat. She extended her arm to the night sky. A blindingly bright bolt of essence erupted from her fingertip, streaking to the heavens.
That should do it, murmured Caden, as the shouting around the castle immediately increased in both volume and urgency. Shall we?
They leaped. Asha hit the ground smoothly, quickly reaching out and steadying Caden as he stumbled. He flexed his leg quickly before nodding and pushing upright. Asha scanned the camp ahead, trying to see a potential path through. The shouting was spreading as more and more soldiers appeared, torches now illuminating the area Asha and Caden needed to cross.
Caden, Asha, I see you, Asha said suddenly. There's a patrol around the corner, coming from the east. Move!
Asha worked her mouth in surprise as she and Caden both reacted at the same time, ducking behind a pile of stone and flattening themselves against the ground. A few seconds later, a light appeared and three soldiers jogged around the edge of the castle, looking alert as they scanned the area but not noticing the two prone forms.
Good. We have a minute now, said Asha as the soldiers passed out of earshot,
the discomfort of speaking against her will unsettling.
This isn't going to be easy. The camp is like an anthill at the moment. If this is going to work, Caden, you're going to need to stay close and copy what Ash is doing exactly. I won't have time to give you instructions like this. Stand up if you understand and are ready.
Caden ran a hand through his hair, looking at Asha.
I guess it's up to Weir now, he whispered to her.
They both stood. She dashed forward abruptly, sliding behind a half-erected tent as a group of soldiers passed nearby before leaping to her feet again, walking this time with a confident stride as if she belonged there, heading westward through the maze of tents. Caden mimicked her exactly, silent, the tension on his face indicating his focus. A couple of soldiers glanced in their direction. One began to rise, but suddenly there was a roar of essence elsewhere in the camp, a distance behind them. The men both leaped to their feet and sprinted away toward it. Asha's heart pounded almost painfully in her chest. Many patches of the camp were still dark. Thousands of soldiers meant that it covered too much space to have torches lit in every small area. Weir guided them mostly toward these pockets, sometimes sprinting through shadows, sometimes walking, and sometimes hiding in one place for minutes at a time. More essence attacks came at opportune moments to distract soldiers blocking their path, though Weir was clearly spacing them out across the entire camp, not risking indicating any particular pattern to the Gilshar. Still, the Desrealites were getting more organized now, the margin for error when Asha and Caden moved getting tighter and tighter, the two of them each time seeming to disappear behind a tent or into shadows just as soldiers would have spotted them. Sometimes they needed to move obliquely, even backward, but the edge of the camp crept gradually closer. Several times Asha could feel the weight of traps bearing down on her, and she could see their effect in the blasts of essence that dissipated into the ether overhead. Fortunately, the bulk of the search remained focused back around the castle, the Desrealites seemingly convinced that there was no way anyone could have sneaked away from it. Asha felt a flicker of hope as they dashed forward once again, finally skidding to a stop in a relatively safe spot among some tents, coming within sight of the very edge of the camp. That small flame immediately died.
I don't think I can do anything about this part, she whispered,
once again speaking without meaning to.
They only just got organized, but they're all the way around, and they seem to have traps.
There was a pause.
I'll fire some essence around where you are in a minute or two. I don't think you should wait longer than that. I'll do my best to distract them, but that's all I can do. Sorry.
Another pause.
Fates with both of you.
Caden studied the line in front of them bleakly. Crossbow-wielding soldiers stood shoulder to shoulder with Dargathan. The Banes assembled here must be all that remained in the entire army. There were no gaps, not as far as the eye could see. And even with essence enhancing their strength, there was no way that Asha and Caden could just punch a hole through.
Thoughts?
Asha pulled in a nervous breath, barely trusting herself to speak.
We rush them, she said. No fighting. Just jump over them. Run into the forest. We're faster than they are.
Caden sucked in air through his teeth.
jump? They have crossbows. A lot of crossbows.
Then let's not get hit in the head, said Asher grimly. My armor will still work through the traps, so I should be able to recover as long as I don't get knocked out. And from what I've seen, you can heal from pretty much anything.
Caden exhaled.
All right, he said slowly. But strengthen yourself as much as you can internally, too. And be ready to go fast. If one of those bolts gets you in the leg or the back, you have to make sure you don't do much more than stumble. If you're not ready, they'll toss you around, and you have to be able to recover, because those Dargaethan will swarm us. He chewed his lip. How high can you jump at speed? Essence will help, of course, but there are physical limits no matter how much of it you have. The Dargaethan can reach up to twice their height easily, if they're quick enough to react.
Asha swallowed. That was 20 feet directly up to clear them. She'd done it before, more than that even, but only in the Dokken, and even then only barely.
I can do it,
she said, with more confidence than she felt. There was no choice here, no chance to sit down and think of a better plan. If they stayed in the camp, it was only a matter of time before they were caught, even with Weir's help.
Good enough, said Caden. Once we...
The forest behind the soldiers and Dargaethan exploded in fire. Many of the men in Banes spun instinctively at the noise and light, soldiers shielding their eyes against the blinding essence flashing among the trees. Neither Asha nor Caden hesitated, scrambling up and sprinting forward, Asha flooding her body with essence and activating her armor again. Time seemed to slow, the space between them and the line of enemies taking an eternity to cross. Screams of warning flew across the field as soldiers spotted them, crossbows rising, Dargaethan darting forward with inhuman speed. Asha waited until she was 20 feet from the closest bane and jumped. Her stomach lurched as she rose sharply, the Dargaethan hissing as it lashed out, barely missing her ankle. She caught a glimpse of soldiers watching slack-jawed as she and Caden soared above them. Then she shouted in pain as a crossbow bolt caught her in the shoulder and another in her side, spinning her around before she landed. She rolled as she hit the ground, well clear of the nearest Desrealite, and scrambled to her feet before sprinting for the blazing forest. Had Caden made it? She risked a glance back, heart lurching. Caden was close behind her, but beyond him a wall of men were taking aim. The heaviness in the air disappeared, and Asha tapped essence as she ran. A thick barrier sprang into existence between them and the Desrealites. A moment later, it flashed in 100 different places as bolts ricocheted off the protective shield. Asha didn't stop, though she saw Caden give her a grateful look. The man's shirt and trousers now looked as if they were made of blood. There was no telling how many times he'd been struck, but he seemed capable of continuing. Without speaking, they sprinted into the burning forest, leaving the furious howls of the Desrealites behind them. Asha, Weir, and Caden sat silently, the thrill of their successful escape fading beneath the reality that now lay before them. Aaron was dead. A lump rose in Asha's throat, and tears threatened to leak from her eyes. The raw emotion of his death, their failure to stop the Desrealites, her exhaustion, it was almost too much. Weir looked hollow, and even Caden no longer had the spark of determination that she'd seen in him since he had entered the Dokken. Essence trickled back into her reserve, the part that she was able to use, but even the feeling of extra energy barely made a difference.
"We cannot win here," said Caden into the hush. "The Gilshar have too many weapons, too many soldiers."
Weir nodded, eyes red with tiredness and grief. Aaron's death had hit him hard, too.
"You did what you could, Caden."
There was silence again, Asha resisting the urge to lash out. She didn't agree. She blamed Caden for not realizing that the other Venerate could use Desrael like this. She blamed him for starting this war. She blamed him for Debian's death. But none of that was productive. She was tired, she was grieving, but she would not lose control. If she did, she wasn't sure that she would ever get it back again.
"So the boundary will fall," Caden continued hollowly. "Northern Andara will be lost." He reluctantly looked at Weir. "But We might still stop the rest.
I know.
Weir rubbed his face, exhaling heavily, then locked eyes with Asha.
And you two are the ones who have to do it. You have to go and get it.
Through the fog of tiredness and sorrow, it took a few moments for Asha to understand what he was saying.
What? No!
Asha put iron into her tone. If we're going to get Lycanius, you're coming too. And if you're not, then I am staying to help you fight. Whoever stays is here to delay the inevitable, said Weir quietly. Caden needs as much time as he can get to finish this, but you are too valuable an asset to waste. He said the words dispassionately.
Don't be ridiculous.
Asha could hear the desperation in her tone, but she didn't care. She couldn't countenance this, not so soon after Aaron.
You're not thinking clearly. You can't just sacrifice yourself. The country needs you. Not to mention that your ability is far too valuable.
Not without anyone to command, it isn't. Weir gave her a gentle smile. And the country won't be worth much if we simply let the Desrealites through. Our being here could delay them a day or two, maybe even a few. We know exactly where they're heading. We're not without advantages. His tone was light, but Asha could see in his eyes that he was deadly serious about this. So go and find Lycanius. Save Davian. Do what needs to be done. Asha stared at him, and this time the tears in her eyes came unbidden. She felt like screaming at him, telling him that he was being stupid, that all he had to do to save himself was leave with them. But she knew, just as he and Caden did, that this was their best course of action, perhaps their only remaining choice. So she stepped forward and enveloped him in a long, tight hug, her tears making a damp patch on his shoulder. He held her silently. When her sobs stopped, she took a deep breath and stepped away, dabbing her eyes.
"Dav is going to be livid if you get yourself killed,"
she said, her voice breaking. Weir choked out a laugh. He was fighting back emotion, too.
"Same goes for you."
He kissed her on the cheek, then stepped away and stuck out his hand toward Caden. "No matter what you've done in the past, you are my friend," he said. Caden paused, then gave him a small smile and clasped his hand warmly.
"That's all I can ask for," he said softly.
He dug into a pocket, then pressed something into Weir's hand.
"I've charged these again. If you get the chance, use it."
Asha caught a glimpse of the white travel stone as Weir slipped it into his pocket. Caden clapped Weir on the back.
"Time for you to get back to the others. They need you. Just do what you can. We'll make sure that it's not in vain."
Weir nodded grimly, hesitating for just a moment. Then he turned, starting back toward the trees. Asha watched him as he walked away. Even in his ragged clothing, even tired as he was, he looked noble. Nobody seeing him, even for the first time, would mistake him for anything but the leader he was. He glanced over his shoulder, locking eyes with her, and giving her one final smile. Then he was gone. She swallowed, then turned to watch as Caden began opening the gate into the heart of Ilshan Gath Del Teth. Chapter 44. Davian watched as Nethgulla slowly turned the steel band over in her hands in the essence light he was providing, examining the incredibly fine detailed constructures that he had so carefully set into the metal.
"What do you think?"
he asked, when he could take the silence no longer. Nethgulla continued to study the band, which was now bent into a shape closer to that of a torque since they had sliced through one part of the metal, allowing for an easier activation method without using essence.
"It looks right," she conceded, a note of vague surprise in her voice as it echoed slightly around the small cave. "I cannot see any reason why this one won't work."
Davian breathed out, shoulders sagging, finally allowing himself to feel the exhaustion of the past few days' work. He took a celebratory bite of the rock-hard bread that Nethgulla had brought him, chewing for several seconds before swallowing, even that tasting good in the glow of his success. This was his 8th attempt to make this vessel. The more recent tries had been close, but each time Nethgulla had been able to point to a fault that Davian had been forced to agree was problematic. The level of precision required was far beyond what any normal vessel would need. That had resulted in his reserve steadily draining again as he fought against sleep in this small black cave, keeping his focus vessel activated almost continuously. He knew that his time here was short, regardless of the fact that he would return to Zvelar at the exact moment when he had left. Nethgulla had warned him that Cassandrid was furious at his escape and Hrethgar's death, but was also confident that Davian hadn't yet made his way out of the complex. His description had been circulated, and people were alert to concerns that there might be a traitor in their midst. Nethgulla had been able to smuggle him small amounts of food and water so far, but that couldn't last forever. His hiding place wouldn't stay tenable for much longer. Nethgulla was still peering at the steel band.
"All right," she said slowly. "Time to see if it works."
She turned and looked at Davian expectantly.
"You want me to use it?"
asked Davian, the bottom suddenly dropping out of his stomach.
"Now?"
Nethgulla sighed impatiently.
"Yes, now,"
she tapped her foot impatiently at his expression.
"Just follow the logic through. If you test it, it must work, because we both know that you don't die